This is the first time that I've ever shared my story in a public setting. If it's God's will, it won't be the last. I start off in the 1980s. I was a kid that was in junior high, middle school, high school in the 1980s. So many different directions, my story. I could take you with my story, so many details, just so much information I won't be able to share. Hopefully, the words that I do share will let you know more about me, possibly see yourself in my story, and most importantly, give you hope. Back to the 1980s, I was raised in a small Oklahoma suburb. It was my dad, mom, younger sister, and me. We were not Catholic. We were a member of a Pentecostal denomination. And looking back on it now, I can see that that's where a little bit of my isolationism, I guess, that I would experience throughout life began. Because I wasn't allowed to play with many of the kids in the neighborhood. They didn't believe like us. They would taint me and my morals and my thinking and my beliefs. So I was protected from them and told to stay away from them. So starting way back then, I wasn't allowed to develop healthy relationships with my peers. I had a best friend from fourth to seventh grade. Then one day, he just quit. I mean, he dropped me, dumped me, whatever, however you want to say it. He cold turkey. Just did not talk to me again. Don't know why. Still don't know why. That was crushing. After that, I went through my junior high and high school years with no friends. I mean zero friends. I was totally isolated. I was completely alone. I acted out in school, was the class clown, agonized teachers, agonized other students. Many teachers would take my desk at the beginning of the hour of class and move it to the hallway because they knew how I was, and they wanted to get me out of the classroom so I wouldn't disrupt the learning that was taking place. So there again, I was isolated. I was sitting out in the hallway by myself. Looking back on it, the symptoms and my behavior, today they would probably call it ADHD. I don't know if it was around or it wasn't as oft diagnosed as it is today. High school years, sophomore, junior year of high school, my parents divorced. That was a crushing blow. Everything I had ever known was gone. It was over. My whole life, everything that was familiar was gone. My dad soon had a girlfriend, his eventual wife, of which they are still married. And my mom a boyfriend, her eventual husband, and they are still married. By my senior year, I spent more and more time with the only constant in my life, my grandmother. She was always there for me. I loved her. I miss her. But in a sense, it's kind of sad that a kid in high school is spending all of his time with his grandmother instead of his peers. But she's all I had, thankfully. The 1990s. I moved to a large metro area in Oklahoma and got a job at a local radio station, the most listened to station in town. Again, I was surrounded by adults, no peers, thus no peer relationships. I felt like I was somebody in a way, you know, hey, you could hear me on the radio. I'm a somebody. People in my hometown could hear me. They thought I was a star. I was admitted. I was satisfied. I was living a good life, but it wasn't. It was all fake. It was all fake, just like so many things would turn out to be in my life. Their perception of me is what mattered most. They thought I had made it. I hadn't made it. They thought I had. That's what mattered most. It was about this time, around 19, 20 years old or so, that I had discovered gay hangouts, in particular gay bookstores, which were the thing of that day. They were hangouts for gay and closeted men. Men who were addicted to sex, men who were addicted to pornography. I was really popular there. I mean, I was new on the scene, young, good-looking, hungry for acceptance. And this was all in secret. I didn't tell, I mean, family, nobody knew I was going there. This was all a secret world that I created. I even used a false name whenever I went there. I didn't want anyone to be able to trace me or you know, ruin my cover. Got fired from the radio station, began spending several hours a day and night visiting all the gay hangouts, the bookstores, the parks, the parking lots, the bars. Many of you will recognize those hangouts. It was a disastrous life, sinful life, but it was meeting my need of wanting to be wanted. Somehow, amidst all this, the Holy Spirit, what else could it have been, drew me into an RCIA class at a local Catholic parish. It was so different than the Pentecostal church I was raised in. But I loved it, and I knew I had found truth. I was received into the Catholic Church in 1998. That is 25 years ago, this past Easter. Thank you, but I wasn't necessarily a good Catholic for a long time. I soon met a young lady who was also Catholic. We were not very upright adherents to our professed beliefs. She became pregnant. You know how that happens. Wanting to be married before the birth of our daughter and without time or even concern for pastoral direction, we went off, got married at a wedding chapel. Not a good decision. To make a long story short, I did not stop going to the bookstores and the parks and the hangouts, and she eventually found out, and after 2 years of so-called marriage and two kids, she left me. What made matters worse was my secret was out, because she blabbed to all the family why she was leaving me. It was now the early 2000s. I was single again. I saw my two kids who were small then, saw them frequently. Never missed an opportunity to spend time with my kiddos. By this time, I'd gotten into outside sales. What that did was allow me time to be outside of the office, where I could work really hard going to try and sell the product to various businesses, but that's not what I did. I worked really hard at going to the hangouts and, you know, the various places. I immersed myself in sin, got fired from job after job for lack of production. My kid's mom and I were entangled in a four-year divorce. It took us longer to divorce than we were married. Four-year divorce. Fought over everything, constantly. Life was chaotic. The only place I could go to get relief from my troubles was the bookstores. No different, I suppose, than an alcoholic going to forget his troubles at a bar. Not only did I have the shame of all my problems, I had the shame of living this perverse lifestyle, an abomination before God. I used to cry out. I begged God. I cried. I screamed out to God. I begged him to deliver me. I went to my bed crying many nights, pleading with God, give me cancer, give me AIDS, give me something, anything. Get me out of this life. The burden, the secrets, the anger, the loneliness was too great. I couldn't bear it anymore. I did love the Catholic faith, and I did go to Mass not as frequently as I should have, and did go to confession. But I couldn't conquer this sinful life I was living. Was it something I was doing outwardly, out and proud, and it was a secret life. It was a secret, sinful life that I was living. All the while I was sinking lower and lower, I was so consumed with this desire to be desired, I guess. Every store, every restaurant, everywhere I went, I was looking for someone to use me. I wanted to be used. For those few minutes I was being used, for those few minutes, at least I was needed. I was wanted. I was useful. I was good for something. I was good at something. To the 2010s, my kid's mom had remarried. She had remarried, moved a couple hours away to an even larger city. I moved along with them. Always put my daughter and son first and had to be close to them no matter what. But again, when I wasn't with them, I was at the hangouts feeding my addiction. By the late 2010s, I was gaining weight, feeling tired, not going to the hangouts like I once did. I didn't know what was going on. I went and got on psych medications, diagnosed anxiety, depression, borderline personality disorder. I developed the personality disorder, I believe, because of 30 years of seeking out and befriending men for the sole purpose of sex, not for friendship or but to be used. That's the only reason I sought them out. And that taints, doing something for that long taints your personality, the way you relate to people, and thus the diagnosis. It came to one point, I could hardly get out of bed. I mean, I was that tired. I would go back, get my meds changed, thinking I needed a different prescription of a different antidepressant or a different anxiety pill. Nothing helped. I was literally in bed 20 hours a day. March 30th, 2019, it was a Saturday, and it was about noon on Saturday, and I looked at my phone, it was ringing, my doctor called me. Now, my doctor, he never calls me, but surely not on a Saturday. Why is my doctor calling me on a Saturday afternoon? It's a very quick phone call, it only lasted 2 or 3 minutes. He said he had run some labs on me and just gotten the results back, and he told me I had AIDS. I was in shock. I could not move for 2 days. I mean, all these thoughts in my head, I wanted to commit suicide. I mean, how could I tell anyone this? How could I keep this information, you know, for my kids so they wouldn't find it? I mean, they're late teenagers by now. I didn't want them to find out. This is humiliating, total devastation. I finally went to a nearby Perpetual Adoration Chapel, spent about 3 hours there. I just sat in the presence of Christ in the Holy Eucharist. I read scriptures about how he was always with us and how he will never leave us. He was the only hope I had. Several days later, I had an appointment with an HIV specialist. I don't know how many of you know much about HIV/AIDS. AIDS is the last stage of an HIV infection. Now, thanks to modern medicine, few, if they're being treated, even get to that AIDS stage anymore. But I was in that stage because I thought back about it, and around 2007, I remembered getting the flu, or I didn't really have the flu, but I felt like I had the flu or something. That was in 2007. Now we're in 2019. That was in 2007. Then it was around that same time I got the shingles, too. I had shingles. And I now know that those are often two telltale signs of an HIV infection. That was 2007. This was 2019. I had it for 12 years. Never knew, was never treated. I told my doctor, he said, yeah, your levels are, your numbers, your levels are such that you probably have had this for 12 years. Two months later, June of 2019, again, thanks to modern medicine, 2 months later, I was undetectable, meaning I had a blood test and there was no detectable HIV in my blood after 60 days of taking my one pill a day medicine. Now, I grew up in the 80s. You know, I'm a kid of the, I remember when the AIDS thing started. I mean, I thought, oh my, I'm going to be taking, you know, a handful of pills three times a day. And it's a different age. Thank God for the advancements in medicine. Undetectable means that the amount of the virus, and I'm still in that range. I'm still undetectable 4 years later. Undetectable means the amount of the virus in my blood is so minute, it doesn't even register with a blood test. When I have blood work done, they have to ship it off and far away and get some more sophisticated testing done. But just a simple blood test, it doesn't show up. It doesn't show up. And an added bonus, once you're undetectable, it is impossible to spread. Impossible to spread. After all that, the same old habits. I would still occasionally go to the hangouts and seek others. Now, I never had contact with them. I was satisfied with the chase. Same old emotions, urges still arise, and I would give in to them every time and go to the familiar places. It was December 20th, 2019, just a few months after my diagnosis, December 20th of 19, 4 p.m., I remember the exact street and the exact spot where I was stuck in traffic that day. I was waiting at a traffic light, and the man in the car next to me sparked all those familiar emotions. My heart started racing, the acceleration, the anticipation, the chase was on. I was about to approach him in traffic with one of the many methods I had perfected over the 30 years, but then I stopped. I stopped. I screamed at the devil. I rebuked him. I asked God and all the saints to help me. The light turned green, and I let that car go past me. I turned the other direction. I pulled over. I stopped. I breathed. I calmed down. And I realized I did it. I had just beaten the devil. For the first time in 30 years, I was tempted and didn't give in. That was an incredible feeling. I mean, an incredible, powerful feeling. I felt powerful. I did. I went to Mass that evening. I was on a high. I was sitting there waiting for Mass to begin and could not stop crying. I was bawling, wiping my eye. I wanted to stand up in front of everyone and shout, "I beat the devil today. I beat him. I hadn't beaten him in 30 years. And finally, I beat him. I beat the temptation." I kept praying for God to deliver me from the temptation. I kept praying for God to take the temptation away from me. It finally dawned on me. I finally realized I would always have the temptation, but he would help me overcome the temptation. And that's what I did. That's why I felt powerful. I knew if I did it once, I could do it again. Of course, I knew it was not me. It was all God. It was all the Holy Spirit. If it were me, I would have done it 30 years ago. It was all God, and I know that. Then I began looking around online, I guess shortly into 2022, for 2021. I don't remember. I was looking around online. Wanted to find others that, I mean, maybe had stories like mine. Maybe I was the only one. I didn't know. God led me to the website of Courage International, based in Connecticut. I saw they were about to have their annual conference. I thought, I would love to go to that. but it's probably on the East Coast. I mean, they're based in Connecticut. It's, you know. Then I scrolled down a little further, and I saw it was in Kansas. Kansas? Kansas? That's just north of me. So I was here 2 years ago at Benedictine College. So many wonderful people I met and reunited with many of them. So such a wonderful organization, from the staff to the men and women themselves. I found a new hobby. It's very therapeutic for me. Possibly it would be for you as well, possibly beneficial to you. I take quotes of the saints, many in particular that deal with my struggles, my issues, and I put that quote with a graphic, usually of that saint. I've now made over 100 of them, 100 of these quotes that I've compiled. And just last week, I want to share these, but how? So I thought, well, I'll make a Facebook group. So I just put them all on Facebook for anyone to share and copy and paste and whatever. It's just Facebook. It's Saintly Wisdom. Saintly Wisdom. Look it up. Join. Copy. Paste. These give me inspiration. They help me. Because I depend on the saints. I depend on their lives. I depend on their words. Some of my favorite. St. Catherine of Siena wrote, "It is human to sin, but diabolical to persist in sin." Whoa. I was diabolical. St. Francis of Assisi wrote, "I have been all things unholy. If God can work through me, He can work through anyone." And isn't that me here tonight? My unholy life I've lived, and hopefully I can inspire others. Saint Zelie Martin, who, as you probably know, is the mother of a saint, Saint Teresa of Lisieux, she wrote, "I want to become a saint. It will not be easy at all. I should have started sooner while it was not so difficult. Better late than never." Me too. St. Thomas, I love his stern, blunt quote, "If you are living in sin, you do not love God." Whoa. That'll slap you in the face. Perhaps my favorite, St. John Paul II, "A person's rightful due is to be treated as an object of love, not as an object for use." Again, "A person's rightful due is to be treated as an object of love, not as an object for use." Wow, that was me. That was me. My rightful due was to be treated as an object of love, not an object for use. That was my due. I was due that. I am due that. I'm due to be loved and not used. Today, it's been 4 years since my diagnosis. Health, all my levels are good. Immune system, it's probably always going to be on the weaker side, but nothing dangerous or life-threatening. In fact, it's good enough I beat off COVID a couple of years ago. I was impressed with that. I mean, really, I'm pretty proud of myself and my immune system. I beat off COVID. Still been tired a lot, but as many of you know, that I've shared it with you, 4 weeks ago, my brother encouraged me to give up sugar. I mean, sweet tea, cookies, pies, donuts, cake, everything. Everything I love. And I did it. I gave up sugar cold turkey. And in the past 4 weeks, haven't been as tired, haven't been taking naps, haven't been falling asleep during the day, up early in the morning, to bed at 10 or 11 at night, sleep all the way through, lost 12 pounds. I mean, hey, it's been wonderful. No. It's been a really great thing. So the HIV regimen and my no sugar diet, I'm in good shape. I referenced my little kids earlier. They're both in college now, one in law school. They are my lives. The devil still does what the devil does. He still tempts me, not as often. He still tempts me. Suppose he always will. As St. Anthony the Great said, the great work of man is to expect temptation until his last breath. Oh, great. The great work of man is to expect temptation until his last breath. Again, I can now, by the grace and mercy of God, fight back and overcome that temptation when it comes. If it's God's will, I would like a Catholic lady to ultimately marry, this time with no lies, no walls, no secrets. I would like to experience something with her that I've never experienced before in my life. Intimacy. Intimacy. I want to know what it feels like. What does it feel like? It won't be easy. I mean, you heard my story. Finding someone to accept my past and love me anyway, that's asking a lot. But again, as John Paul II said, it's my rightful due to be treated as an object of love. It's what I'm due. I am due it. It's not a nice thought. It's not a pretty wish. It's not something that maybe far off. It's my due. I am due to be treated as an object of love. So please pray for me, my health, mental and physical, and for God's will to be done in my life. I leave you with one last quote, which I've adopted as my mantra for life. St. Claude de la Colombière said, Lord, I am in this world to show your mercy to others. I will glorify you by making known how good you are to sinners. He is good indeed. Just look at me. Thank you.